Hey, it's you, man, from KC95 here. Good evening and welcome to Toasted Tavern. Your host, Scott Tobin, and the man called Wags are ready to bring you the night in sports. So pull up a stool, grab a drink, and let's get toasted.
Oh, hello. Whoa, wait a second. I forgot how to do this. Wags here along with Scott Tobin, and yes, you're seeing this correctly. We're back. It's been a little bit of time since we had a chance to get together and talk sports with you. Work, life, and other things have gotten a little bit hectic here as we approach the holiday season. I know. Can you believe it? It's almost Thanksgiving and almost Christmas. What the hell? Where did the year go? But we are back tonight to talk all manner of sports. Lots of baseball talk tonight, hockey, and a little bit of NFL, although after the week Scott and I both had with the NFL picks, maybe we won't talk a whole lot about that. But first off, man, Scott, how are you doing? It's good to see you. I know you're in a couple weeks now into your new job, and that's pretty exciting. You look refreshed, actually.
Yeah, I've been sleeping a lot, man. I've literally been at work from like 7 o'clock in the morning till almost 7 o'clock at night, and then I come home and go to bed. So yeah, I've been sleeping a lot. So I've definitely gotten some rest. But yeah, it's good to be back and talking sports. And we have a lot to talk about, man. You know, like you talked about, there's free agent baseball, there's hockey to talk about, there's football, there's college basketball. I mean, it's a really good time if you're a sports fan because everything's kind of really going right now.
Yeah, this is the time of year where sports fans kind of hit the mecca. I mean, you've got obviously the NHL and the NBA underway, regular season about a month or so in. You've got, you know, free agency, the hot stove talking in Major League Baseball. The NFL is about halfway through their season. You're starting to get playoff positioning and things like that set up. You know, if you're a soccer fan, you've got MLS playoffs and championships getting ready to go on. You got college sports going on. College football is pushing forward to the playoff. You've got, you know, college soccer is in their NCAA tournament. You had the, you know, college volleyball getting close to that as well. You talk about other sports. I mean, high school is there as well. And outside of maybe March Madness, that time of year, this is probably that second great sports time of the year where everything seems to be going on. And it, lucky for us, there's things going on in every one of these sports right now.
Yeah, there really are. There really are. College basketball fans in the area don't really want to talk about it right now as Mizzou got beat somehow by UMKC or KCU, whatever they're calling themselves now. I think they're just KC now, but
the Roos.
Yeah, that was ugly. And then SLU put up a fight against Memphis last night, but lost kind of bad. And, you know, we'll jump into the other stuff. We'll have to talk some hockey. You know, people aren't real thrilled about that right now. But I guess we'll start with some hot stove, huh? Get into the baseball rumors while there still are some.
Yeah, I mean, we talked, you know, in our promo about the fact that, you know, the CBA fight is brewing. I mean, this is coming to a head here very, very soon. We know that there's very good potential that we may start spring training late because the CBA negotiations and fight may be something that drags on for a little while. And, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago about the fact that we weren't sure how this free agency period was going to play out leading up to, you know, the potential freeze when the negotiations start to take place. And I'll be perfectly honest, the amount of guys that have signed, the amount of money that's being thrown around right now is a little surprising. You know, you've got the Cardinals making a couple moves here, but you've got big names either going back home or going to new locations and teams taking chances without really knowing what, you know, the structure of money is going to be like after the CBA. I mean, you've got Noah Syndergaard, who's coming off injury, going to the Angels for 1 year, $21 million. You got Justin Verlander coming back from, you know, Tommy John, gets a year and $25 million from Houston. Eduardo Rodriguez going to the Tigers for $77 million over 5 years. So, I mean, you're seeing these big names, these big contracts being signed. Is it an indictment on the CBA negotiations that you're not going to see a whole lot of change in the money, or are teams just hoping and praying that what they're doing right now is okay once the negotiations are done?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a sign to me that both sides are pretty confident that, you know, we're going to have baseball and we're going to have regular season baseball right away, because owners wouldn't be throwing the kind of money around that they are if they had any concern that they weren't going to get a full season or a season at all. I mean, I think the big one, the surprise to me was the Jose Berrios. I don't know if you saw that.
Yep.
He signed a 7-year, $139 million deal with the Blue Jays yesterday, which actually I thought was kind of cheap. I thought he would be a little bit more expensive than that. But, you know, that's a big lockup for the Blue Jays. Like you said, Verlander today got the 1-year, $25 million, but there's also a second-year option on that, which would be another $22 million. So, I mean, there's $47 million basically that the Astros are throwing there. You know, like you said, the Angels gave Syndergaard the 1-year $20 million deal yesterday. So there are some big names. You know, are there going to be more big name starters jumping out there and signing before the lockout on December 4th? We'll see. I mean, I would imagine that Scott Boras and Max Scherzer are probably going to ride this thing out until after things are done. You know, what a guy like Robbie Ray, who won the Cy Young today, which was kind of a surprise to me that he won the American League Cy Young. You know, does he sign right away, or does he decide to wait until we find out what the new bargaining agreement looks like? You know, that'll be interesting. What is a guy like Marcus Stroman, who, you know, you and I talked about before the show? You know, there are a lot of things kind of linking him to the Cardinals going back to the end of the regular season when he started tweeting out his admiration for Yadi and Waino and the way they work together and how cool it would be to learn from Waino. You know, what does that kind of a contract look like with a guy like Stroman? You know, it'd be interesting to see if the Cardinals could pull that off before you get into that potential lockout period. So we'll just have to see what happens. You know, there's not a whole lot of position players signing, which is kind of the interesting thing. It's basically been pitchers. And like you said, when we talked last week, you know, we thought it was just going to be some, you know, low-level relief pitchers rather signing, and everybody else would kind of hold off until after the new agreement. But it's going to be interesting the next couple of weeks to see if we see any of those shortstops or, you know, one of those other big name pitchers go ahead and get something done. Talking about the Cardinals again, you know, I told you, I think Marcus Stroman is the guy that may end up in St. Louis. I think he's kind of the perfect fit. What are your thoughts on Stroman? Would you like to see him here?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we talked a little bit last year about the fact that we'd like to see Stroman here in St. Louis, and you know, it didn't end up happening at the time. So it does feel like that's the direction things are going right now. Obviously Mo's talked a lot about how the starting rotation and the bullpen are going to be one of the key focuses for the Cardinals in the offseason. You know, he's still backing Paul DeJong at shortstop, which could be a maneuvering tactic of just saying, you know, don't look too desperate for a shortstop, even though you're searching hard for that shortstop middle of the order kind of guy. So, yeah, I definitely see Stroman as probably he's probably the target. Now, there was a report that came out last week that Max Scherzer would definitely entertain an offer from the Cardinals. I don't know if that necessarily means he would sign a low-level deal, a one-year kind of thing in St. Louis for less money to come pitch here. It's very possible, but he did say he would entertain it. So, you know, for the Cardinals, I would at least kick the tires. I mean, with him and even Clayton Kershaw, I would sit there and say, okay, hey, you know, what are you looking for? And if we offer you this, would it entice you? And I think they're going into that going, okay, if we can get one of those guys in here, we'll take it. But our focus is going to be Stroman, a guy that you could probably sign to a couple of years and have him in the fold for, you know, 2 or 3, maybe even 4 years, and really prolong his career here in St. Louis. I think that's the direction they're looking to go. But after looking at some of these, you know, monetary amounts for some of these guys, it really sits there and begs the question, you know, what is a guy like Stroman going to get? And, you know, if you're talking somewhere in the, you know, $18 to $19 million range, that's a little scary because he's a guy that's dealt with injuries the last couple of years, maybe even a little inconsistency. So do you look at that and go, I don't know if I want to spend that kind of money, especially after, you know, people complaining about the contracts that Mo Zalak has given out to guys long term for large amounts of money, especially guys coming over from, you know, the American League in certain instances. You know, is that something that scares you? And really, what do you think the market is for Stroman as far as money is concerned?
You know, I don't think fans would be upset if they gave Stroman that kind of contract just because he is a bigger name. He's a guy that, like you said, has been linked to the Cardinals a couple of times over the last few years. Again, the money thing, you know, I think you're probably looking at, you're probably going to have to give him 3 or 4 years, and it's probably going to be, you know, in that $55, $60 million range somewhere in there, and that may be low. You know, it's probably going to be in that $18 to $20 million range, and you may say, oh, man, that's kind of expensive, but look at the guys that are still available that are, you know, guys that would really be an addition to your rotation, you know, one of those upper level pitchers. You're going to, I mean, $18 million is probably the low mark of what you're going to have to pay for one of those guys if you want to anything higher than a four, basically, because anybody that's a two or one, two or three is going to be in that range. And so, yeah, I think it's going to be something like that. You know, I was talking to some people this week, and, you know, a lot of people are saying, you know, I think Marcus Stroman and Kyle Schwarber are the two guys that you really should watch for the Cardinals. You know, a lot of people are kind of connecting the dots between Schwarber and the Cardinals, which, you know, there's that left-handed bat. He could play the outfield. He could be that hit outfielder there when you need to switch somebody out. And then he could fill in at the DH spot. You know, you can move Gorman around if he's up here. You can move Tommy Edman around. You can make things work. And, you know, like somebody said, Kyle Schwarber could be your leadoff hitter.
I heard that.
And it's worked. You know, it's worked where he's been with his on-base percentage and the pop. Imagine having your 1-2 hitters in your lineup being Schwarber and Goldschmidt. I mean, you talk about pop at the top of your lineup. It doesn't get much bigger than that. You know, that would be interesting. I think you can get Schwarber for 2 or 3 years, and it's probably going to cost you probably – you know, $30 or $45 million, probably in that $15 million range, probably somewhere along those lines. And then, you know, if you could do that, if you could get Stroman, and then, you know, maybe you look at a bullpen pitcher, you know, Joe Kelly's name's popped up a couple of times. Somebody like that, another big arm to add to the bullpen. That, I mean, can you imagine if you had Joe Kelly, Jordan Hicks, Alex Reyes, Hennessy Cabrera, and Giovanni Gallegos? I mean, you're talking like five guys that could throw 100 miles an hour coming out of your bullpen. That would be pretty scary. And then, you know, like you said, the Cardinals are, you know, saying all the right things about Paul DeJong. And I think it's going to be one of those things where that's all you're going to hear from Mo is, you know, we have faith in Paul DeJong. We think him and Sosa can handle it. Maybe you throw Tommy Edman in there. And I think that's going to be it. And you're going to watch. And if one of those shortstops falls, then the Cardinals jump in there. You know, if you could get Trevor Story for a year or two, or if you could get a Javi Baez like we've talked about, then maybe they make a move. But I think it's going to be on their terms if they make a shortstop move. You know, I really do. I think it's going to be if one of those guys falls and they can get it in a range where they feel comfortable. They're definitely not going to overpay for anybody in the shortstop market, I do not believe.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And I kind of want to touch back on something you said about the bullpen. You've got Alex Reyes slotted into that bullpen, it seems like. And he's a guy that may be getting stretched out to be a starter. Do you see them continuing to push for him to be a starter? Or they feel like his role is in the bullpen? Or is it going to be determined on if you get a guy like Stroman for this rotation? I mean, what's the consensus on Reyes? He had a good year first half. He struggled in the second half, obviously. He's always kind of been projected to be a starter. You know, you've got obviously depth in the minors as well at the starting position. I mean, so are we at the point where this year is going to determine the future of Alex Reyes when it comes to where he's at in the Cardinals pitching hierarchy?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where you tell a ball winner, hey, you know, work out, stretch out, be prepared to come to spring training as a starter. And then, like you said, you see what you do in the free agent market. You know, you go get a Stroman, and then you just let guys compete when you get to spring training because, you know, how many times have we thought, okay, we're ready to go, and then somebody gets hurt at the start of spring training or something. But, you know, if you get a Stroman, you start looking around and you go, okay, you have Jack Flaherty, you have Dakota Hudson, you have Adam Wainwright, you have Marcus Stroman, you probably have Miles Michaelis. That would be five, you know. So then you say, okay, Alex Reyes probably is in that bullpen. But you have him stretched out. You have him ready. If somebody gets hurt, then he's the first guy that gets a shot at that. You know, Matthew Liberatore, everybody's going to say, what about Matthew Liberatore? You know, again, Matthew Liberatore is 22 years old. Actually, he isn't quite 22 yet. He's about to turn 22. So if he starts the season in Memphis next year, that's not a bad thing. You know, let him get some more time down there and then let him be ready. You know, if you need him, then he's ready to come. Zach Thompson, you know, everybody was really down on him last year because he really struggled last year. He had a really good showing in the fall league this year, you know, really put his stock back up there. So maybe he's a guy, you know, so, or maybe, you know, who knows, maybe a couple of those guys end up being in your bullpen, you know, being the middle relief, long relief guys when the season starts. But I think, like I said, you just stretch Reyes out, you stretch Hicks out, tell them to be ready to be starters. And then you just kind of let that play out because, you know, I mean, at some point, we don't want to believe it, but at some point, Adam Wainwright, time is going to catch up with him. You know, Miles Michaelis has a ton. There's a ton of questions there because of all the injuries. You know, I mean, you even have to have a little bit of question about Jack because there have been some injury things, and Dakota too, even though he looked really good coming off of Tommy John. But, you know, we saw him pitch, what, 4 times? So, you know, I mean, you just got to have all those guys ready. And, you know, if somebody has to pop in, they pop into that rotation. Otherwise, your bullpen should be really, really strong.
Well, and I just want to quickly touch on Stroman again real quick. Just looking at the statistics, and I know a lot of people are gonna see this and they're going to go, oh, my gosh, why are you going to give this kind of money to this guy? He only has, I think, in his career, 7 years, he's only had 3 seasons where he's actually had a winning record. His rookie year in 2014, he was an 11-6. 2015, he was 4-0. 2017, he was 13-9. Every other season, he's been under 500. But you look over the last couple of seasons, he opted out in 2020 for COVID reasons. He did not want to participate in that. But outside of that, between the AL with Toronto and the NL, he's actually had a really decent ERA, a 3.22 ERA in 2019, 2.96 for Toronto, 3.77 for the Mets. Last year, he had a 3.02 ERA. So he's a guy that, you know, maybe isn't going to win a lot of games because of the offense that was around him in Toronto. And yes, the Toronto offense was pretty good, but the Mets offense was a lot worse last year too. But he's a guy that's not going to give up a ton of runs. His ERA has been really, really good for the most part. He's only had 2 seasons over 4 when it comes to the ERA, and that's saying something being in the AL East for a long time. And yes, the Red Sox and Yankees, maybe their offenses weren't as prolific as they once were, but that is just a deadly row there between them and the Rays in there as well. So to have a sub-4 ERA in the AL East for a majority of your time there, that says something about a pitcher. And you can't look at the record. You have to look at some of the other intangibles around it. And one of those intangibles is WAR, too. And in his career, he's got an 18.5 WAR. So that's a really good statistic right there. So if fans are looking at Marcus Stroman and going, well, the guy doesn't win, he's got a career 61-60 record, why would we want a 500 pitcher on this team? You got to look a little bit deeper. And I know statistics, and I've always preached this, statistics are not the end-all be-all. But if you can look at those kinds of statistics a little bit deeper, but then also have that eye test on there as well, you'll see that Marcus Stroman is actually a really good pitcher. And if you're able to get him in here for a decent price, you're going to like what you see.
Yeah, and you got to remember, you talked about those Blue Jays teams he was on. He was kind of – a couple of those years were kind of the in-between years where the Blue Jays weren't very good. It was kind of after Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion, and those guys were gone, and before Vlad Jr. and – Bo Bichette and the guys that are there now. So Blue Jays weren't very good. That was kind of the rebuilding Blue Jays. So he didn't get a whole lot of offensive or defensive help for a couple of years there. And then you know what a train wreck the Mets have been the last couple of years when he was there. So, you know, I think pitching in St. Louis, you know, he's a sinker ball pitcher. I think pitching with the defense that he would have here in St. Louis, he's never pitched with that kind of a defense behind him. And then pitching in a friendly ball in a hitter friendly pitcher friendly ballpark. Sorry, I'll spit that out in Busch Stadium compared to what he was pitching to in Toronto, which is definitely a hitter's park. I think all of those things will work in his favor as well.
Oh, most definitely. And you also brought up Matthew Liberatore about how, you know, having him down in the minors again may season him up a little bit at the young age. Now, there was a really interesting question that was posed on Twitter tonight by the Redbird Way. And I wanted to get your thoughts on it because we've talked about depth with this team and maybe needing another bat in the lineup that would make an impact. And obviously this trade will probably never materialize because I don't see Washington giving up like that. But the question that was posed by the Redbird Way tonight was, would you trade Nolan Gorman, Matthew Liberatore, and Juan Yepes for Juan Soto?
No. Tell you why. First of all, I wouldn't give up the upside you're going to get from those three guys, Liberatore and Gorman, especially for Soto. Soto's been good, but we've also seen Soto miss a lot of games the last couple of years. Two of those years were COVID issues, but then you have to question his maturity is why he didn't go get vaccinated, why he didn't do the right things to put himself in a good situation 2 years in a row. The other thing is you're going to give up a whole lot of control. If you move those three guys, I mean, those Gorman and Liberatore, you're talking about guys that could be cornerstones of your franchise for the next decade. for a guy in Juan Soto that you're going to have, what, 2 years of control over maybe? And then, you know, he's going to break the bank. Somebody, the Yankees, the Dodgers, somebody are going to give him $450 million, $500 million. Cardinals are not going to do that. So, no, that trade makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I don't think you give away the upside. I mean, we've had many, many guys that this team has traded away that have gone on to have success around the league, and fans are pissed about that in a sense. And, you know, one of those guys is Randy Arozarena, who ended up winning the AL Rookie of the Year this year, despite the fact that it seemed like he played so many games last year when really it wasn't a whole lot. And I want to kind of dive into some of these awards real quick, and we'll start there with Arozarena. And, you know, we had questions last year in the postseason about if this was, you know, the real player, if it was just a fluke, if it was just a hot streak. And, you know, after this season, the fact that he obviously won that, the AL Rookie of the Year, he batted 274, 32 doubles, 20 home runs, 20 stolen bases, 69 RBIs. Do you feel, I mean, it's still not a long track record, but it is a little bit more of a consistent track record. Do you see Randy Arozarena actually being maybe not the real deal, but a guy that can really make an impact for the Rays for the years to come?
I don't know. Is he going to be a solid baseball player? Yeah. I don't know that. I mean, he's going to be good for the Rays, I think, but I don't know that he's going to be like an all-star superstar player. We didn't really see that this year. You know, he was okay. You know, he was solid, but he wasn't the superstar that we saw in the postseason in 2020 that everybody's like, oh my God, I can't believe we traded this guy. I don't know if you saw the meme. Did you see MLB? There was an MLB meme that said, cool, Randy Arozarena won the Rookie of the Year. Didn't know you could do that after you played 5 years in the major leagues. Yeah, he's going to be a solid player. I don't know that he's better than Tyler O'Neill. I don't even know. I think I would rather have Tyler O'Neill's upside. I think I'd rather have Harrison Bader's upside, to be totally honest with you. So I think he's going to be okay, but I've never been that upset that Randy Arozarena was gone, honestly.
Well, I mean, he had some chances up here and didn't really click or spark when he was here. Now, granted, I don't think he was given as much consistent playing time as the Rays gave him last year during that playoff run. So it does make sense that maybe he did struggle a little bit, but you know, you've got the Gold Glover in Harrison Bader. You got the Gold Glover in Tyler O'Neill. You've seen both of them improve in the offensive department as well. And then you throw in Dylan Carlson to that mixture as well, who finished third in the NL voting with Rookie of the Year is concerned. And Edmundo Sosa was actually up there a little bit in the Rookie of the Year voting too. So that's another piece that you had to think about as well. So yeah, I think, you know, you look at it and you go, okay, he had a good year. He won Rookie of the Year, but how many times have we seen guys do that and then essentially fall off the map? I mean, there's been countless guys that the Cardinals have let go that have had good runs for about a year, and then all of a sudden they disappear. So, you know, you have to wait a little bit and see in the long run how that plays out. Like you said, Arozarena will probably be a very solid player, and that's probably about it. I don't think you're going to see a peak like you saw last year, and maybe we're wrong. And I would be fine with being wrong in that instance, because I think if he's there in Tampa and does well and succeeds, I'd love to see him succeed and have the Rays succeed in that instance as well, because I've always been kind of a small-time Rays fan just because of them being the underdogs in that AL East with the Yankees and Red Sox. I'd like to see the Rays succeed. And if Arozarena is the guy that helps lead them to that, then, hey, that's cool. That's all well and good until they meet the Cardinals in the World Series and the Cardinals have to crush them.
Yeah, and, you know, Randy Arozarena will be another guy. He'll have a good 2 or 3 years in Tampa, and then as soon as he starts to make some money, they'll trade him. So, you know, we'll see. I think, like I said, I think he'll be solid.
I think you're right. On the flip side, for the National League, the guy that won this one was someone I was very impressed with this year. He kind of obviously came out of nowhere, had no idea that he was even going to really make the team for Cincinnati this year. But Jonathan India had a really, really good year at second base for the Reds. He took 29 of the 31st place votes and just really kind of ran away with this award. He was a Cardinal killer this year as well. Batted 269, 34 doubles, 21 home runs, 12 stolen bases, 69 RBIs. Very solid year. Took first place in the Rookie of the Year voting. He's a guy that's going to be a pest in the sight of the Cardinals for a very, very long time. And I mean, I wouldn't say he's in the mold of Brandon Phillips pest-wise, but he's a guy that the Cardinals are going to have to really watch and kind of keep an eye on for the next couple of years.
No, yeah, he will. He's a really solid player. He was a number one draft pick for the Reds. And like you said, he was kind of a surprise. I don't think anybody saw him coming as far as winning the Rookie of the Year this year. But, yeah, really solid player. Although when you break those numbers down and then you look at Dylan Carlson, there's not a whole lot of difference in their numbers.
No, there's not at all. I mean, it's been one of those – I think it was just the fact that Carlson didn't play as much as right. Jonathan India did this year. I mean, if Carlson would have played as many games as he did and had similar numbers, I could definitely see Carlson being the guy that ended up taking Rookie of the Year this year.
Yeah, and again, we kind of talked about this the other day. I think part of the reason that Carlson's numbers weren't as high is that they had him in that second spot for a good chunk of the season, and he really wasn't trying to drive the ball, was trying to get on base, and so his home run, his power numbers kind of suffered. I think if he would have been in the middle of the lineup, we would have seen bigger numbers, and maybe he wins that award. But both very good players.
Very, very true. Overall, the Manager of the Year category, Kevin Cash, second year in a row that he won the AL Manager of the Year. First person to repeat as the AL Manager of the Year. And, I mean, you look at what the Rays did. They obviously took the AL East again this year, but they sputtered in the playoffs. And, I mean, I don't know if you can sit there and say that's the manager's fault or not, but you know, the Rays are a consistent winning franchise right now, but only in the regular season. And yes, you've got a two-time Manager of the Year winner, but how much longer does Kevin Cash have there if they can't make it past the first round of the playoffs?
Well, I mean, I don't know that you can really put much of that on Kevin Cash when you keep trading. I mean, you got to remember that they traded Blake Snell and he lost Tyler Glasnow to an injury, you know, at the trade deadline, and he lost this guy and that guy, you know. When you're the Rays manager, you know, if you have good players, you're not going to have them there for very long. So the fact that he can consistently keep getting those teams to the postseason, you got to give him a lot of credit for that. Because most people, when they traded Blake Snell last year in the offseason, kind of wrote the Rays off and said, well, that's the end of that run. And they did it again. So you got to give Kevin Cash a lot of credit. And a lot of people were surprised because a lot of people really thought that the sentimental favorite, Dusty Baker, was going to win that award yesterday.
Yeah, I thought he was as well. I mean, this what he was able to do with Houston, kind of changing the perspective and the view of the Houston Astros, it definitely made sense. Obviously, going as far as they did this year, you had to think he was going to garner a lot of votes. But it does tell you what a job that Kevin Cash is doing in Tampa that he can even beat that and rather easily. On the flip side, in National League, we talked about it last week. It was pretty much a no-brainer who it was going to be. I mean, Mike Schilt was in the conversation being one of the three finalists, but really, he had no shot because Gabe Kapler took a Giants team that no one, and I mean no one, thought was going to do much of anything this year. And it just, you know, they led the league in wins at 107 with a team that had a lot of age, but also you got a lot of youth as well. So it makes perfect sense that Gabe Kapler was the Manager of the Year this year. And, I mean, just a really well-done job by him. He's a guy that you didn't expect to be a great manager right off the bat, but he's done enough. He learned what he did. He learned what he needed to learn from Bruce Bochy. And he's taken those, you know, lessons to heart and really kind of made himself into a really good manager so in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, I mean – you know, things definitely did not go well for him in his short stint in Philadelphia as the manager. They pretty much ran him out of Philly. So, yeah, like you said, nobody really expected much taking over for a legend like Bruce Bochy. And for him to be able to do what he did, very impressive. And the Giants were able to get one of their guys to come back. Brandon Belt took the qualifying offer. So he is going to go back to San Francisco and probably finish his career there, which I'm sure they're happy with after, you know, Buster Posey kind of shocked everybody and announced his retirement last week.
Yeah, and Belt was really the only one of 14 free agents to accept the qualifying offer as well. So I think that shows you how much he wants to be in San Francisco. And I'm sorry, every time I hear his name, I just cannot get that picture out of my mind. Brandon Belt is not a name I want to talk too much about.
Right.
Here in St. Louis. So, but he is back in San Francisco. So, you know, congratulations to him there, and congratulations to Gabe Kapler. We talked a little bit about Robbie Ray winning the AL Cy Young this year, led the AL in ERA, innings, strikeouts, ERA plus, and whip. But I think you're in the same mindset as me that it probably should have been Gerrit Cole, right?
I would think so. You have to wonder how much of the press conference with the, when the sticky stuff came up and Garrett Cole's just absolute mishandling of that press conference made himself look really bad. How much that hurt him. And then he did struggle in the second half. Yep. There were a lot of games he wasn't the same pitcher. So I think there are some questions in some people's minds of what kind of pitcher Garrett Cole really is when he's not using some questionable substance. But, yeah, I was surprised. You know, and you could have made a case for Lance Lynn. Yeah. You know, Lance Lynn had a really solid year again and definitely deserved consideration. But Robbie Ray, you know, a couple of years ago, Robbie Ray looked like he was on the downside of his career. You know, Arizona pretty much just let him walk. And he took a one-year cheap deal with Toronto and kind of revived his career. So good for him.
Well, I'm pretty sure that you ponied up for the Cardinals to bring him in. You thought Robbie Ray in a Cardinal uniform was something that the Cardinals needed. So, I mean, you kind of saw this coming a couple of years ago and thought maybe the Cardinals could get on the ground floor of this. Well, they didn't, and they missed out on a Cy Young Award winner. So, you know, it is what it is. You live, you learn, and you move on. But you know, we talked earlier about the fact that the Cardinals have a lot of pitching depth, so I don't know how much that actually would have affected things from that perspective. So, Robbie Ray, the AL Cy Young Award winner. In the NL, I don't think it's much of a surprise. I mean, I guess it really was a two-horse race between Zach Wheeler and Corbin Burns. Corbin Burns actually gets the Cy Young. He won 151 to 141 over Wheeler. A very, very close vote when it came to that. Both those guys got 12 first-place votes. It really came down to those second-place votes for Corbin Burns. Now, I'll say this. Burns started off great this year. I think it was something like 56, 57 batters before innings before he issued his first walk, struck out a bunch of guys to start the season. He actually is the first pitcher in Major League Baseball history to finish in the top three in strikeouts per nine innings, walks per nine innings, and home runs allowed per nine innings. That's the first time that's ever happened for a pitcher. So it makes kind of a lot of sense that he was the choice for the Cy Young. Now, obviously, Zach Wheeler had a great year this year, but Corbin Burns, I think, from start to finish, was the guy that was probably going to win the Cy Young, and that's what he ended up doing.
You know what? You're probably right, although I'm really surprised that in a lot of ways that Scherzer did not win just because of what he did when he got to L.A. with that team. He was almost unhittable. I'm a little bit surprised, but, yeah, Corbin Burns probably deserved it.
Yeah, I think so, too. And it's hard to say because obviously he's in the Central Division and you had to see him a bunch of times. But he really was a guy that, you know, just did come out of nowhere like Jonathan India and hit the map. And people just didn't know what to expect, couldn't hit him. And it wasn't just the Cardinals that couldn't hit him. It was a lot of teams that couldn't hit him. So we'll see what he's going to be able to do this year. And that's the big thing. When you get a guy that comes out of nowhere, especially in the pitching department, that first year is great and all, but once people start to see you and see your stuff, how do you react and how do you adjust to that? So this upcoming year for Corbin Burns is going to be a very, very big one. If he's going to last in this league a long time, he needs to go out there and prove that he can replicate what he did this year. Maybe not to the extent that he did, but at least to a point where people go, okay, he won a Cy Young for a reason. He's a consistent pitcher. We'll see how that plays out. So Corbin Burns, the NL Cy Young winner there. MVP is going to be announced a little bit later this week. You've got in the NL Bryce Harper, Fernando Tatis Jr., and Juan Soto, kind of the top three horses in that race. In the AL, Shohei Ohtani, Vlad Guerrero Jr., and Trevor Siemian. Marcus Siemian. I'm thinking football all of a sudden. Don't think football. We did bad this week. Marcus Siemian in the race for the AL MVP. So, you know, kind of handicap those races for me. Who do you feel is going to win it, and who do you feel should win it in each of the leagues?
It's probably going to be Soto and Ohtani. I would give it to Bryce Harper in the National League just because he had such – even though his RBI total wasn't there, everything else was unbelievable. He was kind of the catalyst for that Philly offense and with his defense, so I would go Harper. Ohtani's going to win it, no doubt, in the American League. I'm not the biggest Shohei Ohtani fan. I know that I'm just not. But he's going to win easily. And like I said, I would give it to Harper, but I think Juan Soto will probably win in the National League just because the hype train behind Juan Soto is really, really high.
Well, I still can't get past the whole fact that he was on a losing team. And yet you're the most valuable player. I mean, if you're the most valuable player, you know, your team should be a bit better. But I also understand the argument that if you take Juan Soto off that team, they are a lot worse than what they were even this past year. So I get where the argument comes in that Soto is the guy that is the most valuable player. But you know, if you're talking about most valuable player in the league, you got to have a guy that's not just good individually statistic wise, but you have to have a guy that's good for the team and helps the team be better as well. And I think it's one of those things that it's coming down. It really is an individual award now. And I'm not a huge fan of that. I mean, I think you need to maybe look into having, you know, the most important player award and then an MVP award as well. You know, Juan Soto is probably the most important player on his team. But is he the most valuable in the NL? No, it should be a guy that did more for his team and got his team further than just putting up good individual statistics.
Well, and you can make that same case for Shohei Ohtani because everybody talks about how great he is. But if Shohei Ohtani is not on the Angels, they're still the exact same Angels. They still have basically the same record that they've had for the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. He really has made no difference to that team whatsoever, honestly.
No, he really hasn't. I mean, he's put some butts in seats. He's had coverage brought to L.A. from a couple of different sectors as well. But, yes, he's led the league in home runs. He's a guy that has a really good ERA and all that. So he individually has done a lot of really good things for himself. But how much does that actually help the team itself win, get into the playoffs, go deep into the playoffs? It just hasn't happened. And, you know, obviously you could probably make the same argument for Mike Trout when he was winning those MVP awards as well. But I mean, I look at Trout and I think that, yeah, his individual numbers were really, really good. But I also do think without Mike Trout, they are nowhere near as good as they were in those time frames as well. But once again, it goes back. That's more of a most important player kind of award than an MVP award. So, I mean, are we anywhere closer to having a split in that kind of mindset to where, you know, a player that's very important to his team gets recognized, but a player that actually makes a bigger impact, maybe not leading the league in certain things. Is that an award that could potentially come about?
Yeah, you may have to do something. I mean, I think you really do have to look at it. You know, when you, like you said, when you start talking about most valuable player, that should be a guy to a team. And for, you know, potentially two guys to win it that their teams were, you know, near the bottom of their division, you know, that doesn't seem quite right. So, yeah, you need to figure out a way to maybe add another award and have an offensive player of the year and an MVP, something along those lines maybe.
Yeah, I think that's the proper way to go, the right way to go. And, you know, obviously it's more sponsorship opportunities and more coverage opportunities. So, honestly, it's more money. So, there you go, baseball. You need some more money, right? No, you don't. You don't need more money. Please, no more money. All right, now we got to get into the negative stuff because it's the last 20 minutes of the show, and you know why would you want to end on a high note, Mike? Come on. Let's talk about the NHL first. We had to talk about the Blues. This team got off to a really, really good start, and you rightly were concerned if they were going to be able to sustain it, and at this point, they have not. Four straight losses, including a loss last night to the Arizona Coyotes, who got their second win of the season, first win on the road. Just a bad overall effort by this Blues team. Jordan Kyrou, Torrey Crew getting goals for the Blues. Binnington had a good night, decent 20 out of 23. So, I mean, maybe a stop here or there could have been made. But, you know, the fact that the Blues only allowed 23 shots, maybe you take that as a positive. Not entirely sure. You did have the NHL debut of Scott Perunovic, which a lot of fans were clamoring for, and I think this kid's going to be really, really good for this team. But before I make my argument about why we should not be completely down on the Blues, you need to tell me what your feelings are on the Blues at this point in time.
I'm just laughing because we talked about this a couple of weeks ago when they were 7-1 and said, you know, there is a downtime coming and the panic bus will be running and it's running right now. You know, I literally heard people, you know, after 8 games, Jordan Binnington was the goalie that he was, you know, when we won the Stanley Cup. Tonight I heard people, local people, and I'll say, I'm not going to throw names out there, but I heard local radio people today going, I still think Jordan Bennington's an okay NHL goalie. I'm not sure that he's an elite goalie or a top of the league goalie, but he's okay. You know, how do you change that mind in that short of a time span? And, you know, what, we're 15 games into the season? You know, and you got to take into effect, I mean, I'm like you, you know, you knew this was going to happen at some point, but you got to look at all the stuff this team's had to deal with the COVID things and injuries, and, you know, it just all hit them at once. So I still don't know what this team is. Are they as good as they were early in the season? Probably not. Are they as bad as they are right now? Probably not. They're probably somewhere in the middle, you know, a team right on the edge. I think pretty much, like I said, the way I feel about them is the way I felt when I made my prediction, where I said I thought they were going to be battling to get into the playoffs. And I think that's where this team is. I think this is a team that's defense is not very good, honestly. I mean, they're okay, but I don't think they're very good. And I think this team is going to have to really fight and scratch and claw to get in the playoffs. And I think they're still, that's still where I see them right now.
And I think I'm right there with you as well. And, you know, the defense, like you said, is it's one of those things, you know, you take one piece away from that defense and it all essentially crumbles. You know, Torrey Krug was out with COVID, came back last night for the first time in about 10, 12 days. So, yeah, that they're dealing with. But once he gets back in there and slots into his role, everybody else can slot down. And you add a guy like Scott Perunovich in there who was leading the AHL in points as a defenseman this year. So adding that in there, and like I said earlier, just watching the game last night, the kid looked like he belonged. He was confident with the puck. He had his head up. He was making plays. He was going up against top players. Everything that you wanted to see out of Scott Perunovich, you saw in that first game. Now, granted, couple more games, maybe he does get exploited a little bit, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I think he's going to be here and here to stay, which is really, really cool. And then you also saw the return of Oscar Sundquist last night as well. Ryan O'Reilly is still getting back into form coming off of the COVID. Brandon Saad as well. So that's the thing that you pointed out. You know, this team has dealt with injuries. This team has dealt with COVID. Joel Hofer had to come up and play a couple of games because Ville Husso was out. So we saw this back in 2019. A bunch of new players coming in. It took a while for this team to gel. Well, you're seeing kind of the same thing. You're not seeing the influx of new players having to gel together, but you're having to really piece some things together. So every night it's a different lineup outside of the last two nights. So it's going to take a little while for this team to really find its comfort level and figure out who plays well with each other. And you got to have to take the good with the bad. You know, the good was the start of the season. The bad is right now. They've got a chance tomorrow night against San Jose to kind of right the ship before they go back out on the road here real soon. So there's potential to get this thing rolling again, especially if you get those consistent lines and get guys healthy. I mean, you take 10 days off of conditioning and skating that you know, Ryan O'Reilly had to take off, that Torrey Krug had to take off. It's going to take you a little time to get back, and COVID hits you. And it hits you and it knocks you down. So it's not going to be a quick recovery. The fact that these guys are out there giving their all right now is something that needs to be commended, not, you know, pissed on, essentially. So you got to give them that. And then, you know, you look at what a guy like Vladimir Tarasenko is doing right now. He is really the heart and soul of this team right now. Three straight games into last night, scored the tying goal in the third period. So he's out there busting his ass, and he doesn't have to. I mean, the only reason he's doing it is to kind of up his trade value, which at this point right now, I don't see how you trade Vladimir Tarasenko at all. I mean, he's the guy that's scoring you goals. He's the one that's giving you passion and drive. He's a leader on this team, and you do not get rid of him. You got Jordan Kyrou, who's playing phenomenally right now. The speed, everything, goal scoring is there. And I know he's not scored a ton of goals this year, but wow. Robert motherfucking Thomas has been a amazing just playmaker this year. He's a guy that the puck is on a string. He is making seasoned veterans look absolutely stupid. Some of the passes he's making right now are just unbelievable. So the goals aren't going in. He's not shooting a ton, but man, he is setting guys up left and right. And I think you're seeing this year why the Blues are so high on a guy like Robert Thomas.
Yeah, I agree. He's looked really good. Like you said, he's not scored a lot of goals, but definitely doing a nice job playing center, setting guys up, and he's a very solid player. I mean, the Blues have some real talent on this team. You know, it's just going to take a while to figure it out. And you know, you talk about it's only a 15 game sample size, but you can make parallels to this past Cardinals season. Cardinals started really well, then all of a sudden everybody got hurt. You know, you lost Bader, you lost O'Neal, you lost Flaherty, you struggled in the middle, then everybody got healthy, and you played well again. And I think that's what you're going to see from this Blues team. I think when you get everybody back, they're going to play – again, I'm not saying they're going to be as good as they were those first eight games where they are 7-1, but I think they're going to be a really solid team, and I think they're going to be right there in the playoff hunt.
Yeah, you got, you know, Brandon Saad, Pavel Buchnevich trying to get integrated into this system. They're going to start putting some goals in and really, you know, lifting themselves up. Like you said, I said earlier, Oscar Sundqvist gets back in the lineup. That's really going to solidify that fourth line and really make it a very tough line for teams to go against. You know, James Neal has been on that line as well. You got Dakota Joshua bringing some grit there too. So once again, if you get guys and you can slot your lines, you're going to end up being fine. The one guy that has to get going again, and I don't know if he's playing hurt right now or not because he has to, David Perron has kind of disappeared the last week or so. I mean, he's had some moments here and there, but the consistency hasn't been there. And I don't think it's through lack of, you know, lack of effort or anything like that. I really do think that maybe he is dealing with some sort of nagging injury. And you're also missing Braden Schenn. And right. we talked about this a couple of years ago with Jaden Schwartz, and it's amazing how losing just one guy can really throw a team completely off. And I think that's really what's happened since Braden Schenn's gone down, is this team has just not been able to click because they're all kind of jumbled and all over the place. So if they're able to get a guy like Braden Schenn back here very, very soon, I do think you see a turnaround pretty quickly.
Yeah, I agree with you. Although the report from the Blues today didn't sound real positive on Schenn. It doesn't sound like he's making a ton of progress. There's still no real date set on when he may return. So that's a little bit alarming, but hopefully it's not too terribly long before we see him back.
Yeah, I think you're right. I got to predict it's got to do something with the ribs, whether bruised or maybe, you know, cracked in some instance, because I was at the game that he got injured and he went into the boards hard. And it was not a pretty sight. He, you know, he left, he went to the locker room, came back, played the next game as well. But you could tell there was something just a little bit off. So bruised or cracked ribs would be my guess. And that takes a little while to get yourself back into form. So hopefully we see him sooner rather than later. Probably won't see him tomorrow night against San Jose. But that's going to be another one of those games that, just like last night's game against Arizona, should be a game that this team finds a way to win. They didn't do that last night against Arizona, but you kind of hope that they get pissed off about losing to a team that had not won on the road and only had won one game all year. A team you beat 7-4 earlier this year as well. So hopefully they'll be able to kind of kick it into gear before they head out to Dallas on Saturday. And then they host Vegas on Monday. Now, Vegas is a team that's dealing with a lot of injuries and COVID issues as well. So that might be a time that the Blues are getting the Golden Knights at a good time. So we'll see how that plays out. All right, got to keep the negativity train rolling. Let's jump over to the NFL. We did not have a good week, Scott, at all.
No, nobody did. You know what? We're halfway through the season, and you know what I know about the NFL?
Nothing.
I know nothing about the NFL this year. I don't know who's good, Wags. I really don't. I couldn't tell you who's a good team in the NFC or the AFC at this point. I will tell you, it looks like things are going to fall into Kansas City's lap, and they seem to be maybe starting to figure things out. You know, maybe everybody comes back to them, and they get hot, and the Chiefs end up, you know, winning the AFC. I mean, it's definitely playing out that way. I mean, you look at it in the NFC, I mean, I don't even know what to say. I guess Arizona's the best team in the AFC. I mean, Green Bay's okay. The Rams are a joke. I mean, you've seen what they've done the last two or three weeks, and they keep bringing these guys in. They've got a bunch of names on that team, but I'm not sure that they're really talented.
You're forgetting one team in the NFC, and it's a team. I think you're trying to avoid it on purpose. Because I don't know if you're just trying not to jinx them or you just don't believe in them. But man, how about them Cowboys?
I don't believe in them. I still don't believe in them.
They're 4-1 at home, 3-1 away. I mean, they're 7-2. They're sitting in second place in the NFC. Well, third place in the NFC right now. I mean, what do you not believe about in them right now?
I don't think they can win a big game. I don't think they will. Let's see what they do in December. Let's see what they do in the playoffs. They may get in the playoffs. I think they'll lose in the first game. I don't have faith in Dak Prescott to win a big game. When it comes down to the crucial moments, I expect him to make a mistake. It's the same way I felt about Tony Romo for years. Romo proved me right year after year after year, And to this point, Dak has as well, just has not been able to win those big games. I don't believe in him. I still don't believe in that defense. I don't, you know, and as much as I've been a Cowboy fan, part of this is, I'll be honest too, is the fact that with all the St. Louis, with all the stuff coming out, I have a really hard time saying anything positive about anything that Jerry Jones has anything to do with. But I don't believe in this team. I think it's still just a mirage, to be totally honest with you. I think they're going to crumble.
Well, I mean, they are playing in the NFC East, so I mean that has something to do with it as well. Although they've only played two divisional games, they're actually 5-1 against the NFC this year. And like you said earlier, without really knowing how good any of these NFC teams are, what does that actually say about it as well? But they get a big test this week when they travel to Kansas City to play the Chiefs. This is going to be a really big test, I think, for both teams. I mean, it's a big test for Dallas to see if they can win a big game on the road. It's a big test for Kansas City to see if they can continue to improve on their play this year. I mean, they're sitting at 6-4 right now. That gives them essentially second place. I mean, Baltimore and Buffalo both sitting at 6-3, so technically percentage points higher than the Chiefs right now. But I feel like they're probably playing the best out of those three teams. I mean, Baltimore inexplicably losing to Miami on Thursday night, that just cannot happen if you're going to win the AFC North. Although it doesn't seem like anybody wants to win the AFC North right now. And honestly, I don't think anybody wants to win any of the divisions right now outside of the AFC South. I think if you look at the AFC, and even without Derrick Henry, the Tennessee Titans are probably the best team in the AFC right now. I don't know if in the long run they're actually going to be, but this is a team that's had to deal with injuries to Julio Jones and to Derrick Henry, and yet they're still sitting at 8-2, 4-1 at home and away. They're 5-1 in conference, 3-0 in their division. So, I mean, they're doing everything that they need to do to, you know, maybe get the top seed, get that bye, get the home field advantage throughout the playoffs. And if they can get Derrick Henry back near the end of the season, and, you know, a fresh Derrick Henry, healthy, that could be a scary proposition going into the playoffs when a lot of these teams are worn down.
Yeah, if they can get him back, you know, there's some pretty big questions whether we'll see Derrick Henry this year or not. And if they can't get him back, I'm not sure they can sustain this without him. Adrian Peterson out there still going, the ageless wonder himself. But you got to give Ryan Tannehill credit. You know, nobody thought he was going to make it when Miami traded him there. Everybody thought that was kind of a joke. And Tannehill's really turned his career around and turned into a pretty good quarterback in the NFL. But, you talk about those teams. Is Baltimore good? I have no idea. Is Buffalo good? You would think so, but they haven't really shown it. You know, we thought Tampa Bay was going to be good. You know, they have good games, and then they look awful. You know, the Packers, they're okay. They find ways to win. You know, Arizona, you know, if they get Kyler Murray back, if they get DeAndre Hopkins back, if they're healthy, I think they may be the best team in the NFC. But those two guys have to be healthy and able to play. And then, you know, the rest of the NFC, like you said, you can just pretty much close your eyes and throw a wet paper towel at the wall and say, okay, you're going to play in the NFC Championship game. And it would change every week because, you know, I mean, yeah, it's just crazy. It wouldn't shock me at all if Atlanta blows out New England tomorrow night. They shouldn't. You know, the way New England's looked the last 3 or 4 weeks, they shouldn't. But it wouldn't surprise me because, I mean, like you said, Baltimore had no business losing to Miami. And, you know, a team that doesn't have a whole lot of wins but is starting to look pretty good and is playing tough all of a sudden. Urban Meyer might keep his job because the Jaguars all of a sudden are playing some pretty good football.
Yeah, I mean, they're 2-7 this year, but you have seen improvement. You've seen progress. And we talked about this early on that if you see progress building, it may not result in wins. But if you see learning and you see guys starting to gel and come together as a team, that's a really good sign. And they were at a low of lows, especially with the Urban Meyer situation, going to the restaurant and all that. And yet they've essentially stopped talking and played. And that's exactly what you can hope for. And I don't know if that has changed to the point where, you know, players in Jacksonville want to now play for Urban Meyer or not, but they're controlling the narrative right now, and you got to give all the credit in the world to them. It definitely saved Meyer's job for sure. They still had to compete the rest of the rest of the way here, but you're seeing the progression of Trevor Lawrence. You're seeing the progression of the Jaguars playing, you know, Indianapolis tough this past week. They're playing tough games. So yeah, Jacksonville is a team that you look at and you go, okay, let's see what this, see where this goes.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I was like, oh, Trevor Lawrence, I don't know. The guy I feel bad for, you know, when training camp was ending and the season started, everybody said, oh, Zach Wilson looks for real. Now people are going, yeah, Zach Wilson, not sure. He's hurt for a couple of weeks. Not sure he should be the starter when he comes back. I mean, is there ever going to be a quarterback in New York that they drafted? I mean, when was the last time the Jets – Chad Pennington, was that the last time the Jets had a halfway decent quarterback that – played for more than a year or two?
You know, I'd give it to Mark Sanchez. I think Sanchez got a bad rap. I mean, he really did get a bad rap up there in New York, but he led him to what, three straight AFC championship games?
Yeah, I mean, you got a lot of that was because of Rex Ryan's defense, but
oh, yeah,
but Sanchez him there. Right, yeah. He made plays. You know, he didn't make mistakes. He, you know, was a game manager, and he was all right. You're right. You know, they had that little run when Ryan was there. But other than that, you know, they haven't been good since Bill Parcells was there.
That's very, very true. And another team you got to talk about up there in that AFC East, and I mean, I don't know if you can like them at all now because, you know, everything that's gone down. But, you know, New England went in and, you know, they hosted Cleveland last week, a team that blew out Cincinnati the week before. The defense looked absolutely phenomenal. Everybody was healthy. You know, you and I both picked the Browns to win that game because the defense really showed up in Cincinnati. Well, the defense and the offense didn't show up in New England, and New England crushed them on Sunday. Now, like you said, they've got a decent matchup against Atlanta this week. They're on a bit of a run at this point in time. Is New England a team that maybe potentially could sneak its way into the playoffs? I mean, like you said, Buffalo not playing great, and they got a chance to be back in just one plus year removed from Tom Brady leaving.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely have a shot at a wild card. You know, that defense is really good, and Mac Wilson. I'm combining quarterbacks now. Mac Jones has played well enough. I mean, he's not been great, but, you know, he's done enough to keep that offense rolling. That'll be the question. I think their defense is going to play tough. It's just going to be, is their offense going to consistently score enough points for them to win games down the stretch? If they can with that defense, then, yeah, they could definitely be a threat going into the playoffs.
It's going to come down to the running back situation. I mean, they've been able to, you know, essentially plug and play this year. Obviously, the running back they had on Sunday had a big-time game, and he was a backup going into that game. So that's the MO of Bill Belichick, though, is that, you know, you get a game manager like a Mac Jones, you get contributions from sources that maybe other teams would look at and go, eh, okay, whatever. But if they run the system and they run the scheme right, they're going to be successful. And that's exactly what we're seeing in New England right now, is that they're running the scheme the way it's supposed to be run. And you're getting guys being successful. So, you know, if they can do that, it'll just prove once again that, you know, Brady is a phenomenal quarterback. And putting him, a phenomenal quarterback, in the Bill Belichick phenomenal scheme, there's a reason why they were so successful. But now, if the Patriots make the playoffs, and obviously Tom Brady will probably make the playoffs as well, it'll just go to show you that it really wasn't one or the other that got the Patriots to where they were at. It was the cheating. But the combination, they can do it separately as well if you get the right personnel in the right situation. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the Patriots, you know, end up this year. And, you know, who knows, maybe they are back and it's just going to be another long run of success for the Patriots.
You never know. It'll be interesting. You know, and you got to remember that Tom Brady wasn't Tom Brady for the first few years in New England. He was a game manager. I mean, he didn't really do a whole lot, even for those first couple of Super Bowls. You know, he just didn't turn the ball over, and their defense won games for him. So, and well, their defense and Adam Vinatieri won games for him, but and they cheated. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see if that same formula can work with Mac Jones as we move down the road.
Yep. All right. So quickly, New England, Atlanta tomorrow night. I got the Patriots. Cross my fingers on that one. Are you going Patriots as well?
Oh man, you know what? like I said, I know nothing about football, but I'm going to go for it. I'm going to throw the upset out there. I'm going to say the Falcons shock the world and beat the Patriots tomorrow.
I mean, they need to, you know, get retribution for 28-3, but that's a whole other story. So that's the Thursday night football matchup, Patriots at Falcons. We'll see if the Falcons can get retribution for that Super Bowl loss, or we'll see if the Patriots can continue to roll and move up the standings, maybe even bypass Buffalo this week, who hosts Indianapolis on Sunday. That's going to be a hell of a game for sure. We'll have more of our picks for those games a little bit later on this week, but that game is going on tomorrow. Like I said earlier, the Blues and Sharks will be hooking up tomorrow night as well down at Enterprise Center. College basketball is back. You've got high school football state championships beginning this week as well. Do you got any games coming up this week that you'll be calling?
No, I am done with football for right now, but I will start my journey into high school basketball starting Monday night.
Whoo, nice, nice. And I know that they just announced the Coaches versus Cancer lineup as far as teams participating, as well as the Norm Stewart Classic as well. If you go to a fan of the show or a friend of the show, Jim Powers, page, both of those are listed out there as well. Some really, really good games coming up in both of those tournaments as well. So make sure you check those out. I'm actually going to try and get out there and watch the Pattonville play in the Norm Stewart Classic down there in Columbia. So we'll see if that ends up happening. So we'll see how that plays out. But lots of great sports action coming down the pipe in the St. Louis and Missouri area. So make sure you check those out. We want to thank you guys for joining us tonight. It was good to be back. We're going to look to see about getting more content out there as we go along. And hopefully you'll be able to see more of us. So, Scott, you got anything else before we head out tonight?
Real quick, I want to thank everybody for helping us with the Real Men Wear Pink campaign through October. And just to let you know, even though October is over, you can still donate to the Real Men Wear Pink campaign through the end of the year. So you can still go to my website. There's still a link on our page. So you can still go donate to the American Cancer Society, Help the Real Men Wear Pink campaign fight breast cancer. So please, if you can, donate, because you can still make a big difference there.
Yeah, because research and donations and all of that, doesn't, it's not just a one-month affair. It's an everyday kind of thing. So it doesn't matter if it's a month celebrating research and promotion of that, or it's just a normal day. You can donate. You can do whatever you can. Donate your money. Donate your time. Donate resources. Whatever it is that you can do to help the fight against cancer, do it. It doesn't matter if it's October or March. Go out there and do what you can do to help out. So once again, I want to thank you guys for joining us. For Scott, I am Wags. Have a great rest of your night, and we'll see you here real soon in the near future.
Hey, it's you, man, here from Casey. For all your sports news, catch the Toasted Tavern with Scott Tobin and the man called Wags weeknights at 9 p.m. You can follow Toasted Tavern on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get toasted.